podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Red, your lunchtime catch-up on all things Liverpool FC, and soon to be your daily reminder that the Reds are top of the league. But the Reds are Carabao Cup winners, still in the FA Cup, and motoring ahead in the Europa League. So all is going well on all fronts. We are going to get players back from injury soon, and then the real business will begin. Obviously, some of the summer business began yesterday with the announcement that Michael Edwards will return as the CEO for football for Fenway Sports Group. His role will include overseeing football operations or managing football operations at Liverpool. He will leave his consultancy role with Ludonautics, who are the company set up by Ian Graham. And he will be in charge of appointing the new leadership at the club. That new leadership will include a sporting director, potentially a technical director as well, maybe. And obviously a new manager with Jurgen Klopp set to leave. Which obviously, there's still a lot of people who are very upset about the fact that Jurgen is leaving, and that's completely understandable. We have, assuming we don't get trounced tomorrow by Sparta Prague, we have a minimum of 13 games left with Jurgen and a potential maximum of 19. Which, you know, it's quite a bit. So still a lot of Jurgen to enjoy. Fenway Sports Group released a long detailed statement yesterday about the announcement. And it's very clear that the club are very, very excited about the possibilities that the return of Edwards will bring. Edwards has released his own statement. And he's talked about how grateful he is, how humbled he is by the desire and persistence they showed in wanting to bring him back. Reminds me a lot of FSG with Theo Epstein, who I think they view very much as the, Edwards very much as their Theo Epstein within football. Epstein obviously now back working with them as well, just to give them more brains in the FSG trust. And Edward spoke about how there's the possibility or the likelihood of the multi-club model. As such, one of the biggest factors in my decision is the commitment to acquire and oversee an additional club, growing this area of their organization. I believe that to remain competitive, investment and expansion of the current football portfolio is necessary. And I completely agree with this. Spoke yesterday about some clubs that potentially could make sense for us. Liverpool, Montevideo, Solskjaer. I think those two would be good starting points. I think Belgium is a country they might look at. Obviously, Portugal. I've been through the clubs in Portugal, and the ones with the kind of infrastructure that you would imagine would be appealing, they've all been taken over within the last couple of years, or they're Sporting, Porto and Benfica. And I don't think we'll be looking for a club of that magnitude. I think more likely they'll be looking for an undervalued asset, very similar to Liverpool when they bought them. A club potentially in financial trouble, which is why Solskjaer becomes quite interesting, because they were relegated from the second division of France into the third division of France because of their financial problems. I do think a club in South America to have that base there, that hub, the ability then to scout from there and bring in the best young talent in South America to a South American base. And Uruguay is geographically well placed for this. Now, they might prefer a club in Brazil. They might prefer a club in Argentina. But I think some of the rules in Argentina could make it very difficult for them to own a club, whereas I don't think that would be an issue in Uruguay. I think it's just very exciting. And I've seen some people push back and say, well, you know, there's the other fan base to factor in here. There's another club with history and with a community that the club serves to consider. And I have fully considered this, which is why I suggest that a club like Solskjaer, who have significant financial trouble, makes a lot of sense. They're not a club who historically have been competing to win significant honours, but they are an important club to their community. They are a club that matters to a lot of people. But those people at the moment stand at risk of losing their club if their financial situation isn't rectified. And that's why I think the opportunity for someone like FSG to go in, put in place sustainable management, and get the club on a good footing and potentially grow them into, you know, a mid-level top flight team in France. I think that's sort of the ultimate aim for a club like that, is that the club does well. And obviously being in the first division would be much better than being in the third division. There's investment in the club. There's better players coming into the club and a more entertaining brand of football to watch. And yeah, I mean, you'd look at it and you'd say, oh, well, they'll just be basically developing players for us. But they develop players for other clubs now anyway, because the players don't come through there with the intention of staying there forever. So nothing would really change in that regard. It would just be a case where they might develop more players. And not all of them would be for us. Some would be for them to keep. Others would be just to sell elsewhere and use that as a means to fund the club and keep them sustainable. You don't have to go in and throw your branding all over everything. There's nothing that says we have to bring them in and make them part of a Liverpool football group and change the colours of their shirt and change their badge and change their sponsorship. We don't have to slap a big Red Bull logo on them or anything like that, the way RB Leipzig and RB Salzburg have done. We don't have to do any of that. I mean, you look at Midtjylland, owned by Matthew Benham, who owns Brentford. You'd never know those clubs were linked. You look at Union Saint-Gilloise, you wouldn't know that they were owned by Brighton unless someone told you. There's many, many ways to run the multi-club model. It's not all one size fits all. Like, for example, the group that own Aston Villa, Wes Edens and the Egyptian chap whose name is completely escaping me, like, they also own a club in Portugal, Vitória, but you wouldn't know. There's been no change in Vitória from the outside looking in. There's been internal changes in terms of making that club more sustainable, making them financially more viable, and they've also made them a bit more competitive as well, which is a big deal. You don't have to go in and change everything about the club. Nobody's suggesting that we would do that. Nobody's suggesting that we would pull that club away from their community. When you see people, here's the thing. If you look at the majority of clubs that are owned by people who also own another club, you rarely hear anything from them. What you hear from is you hear from clubs, the fan base of clubs that are struggling. The big example of that right now is Strasbourg, right? Strasbourg fans are very unhappy because of how they're being run. But Chelsea fans are also unhappy about how their club is operating. That's not a multi-club thing. That's just a bad owner. That's all that is. It's the same with the chap that used to own Charlton, also owns Standard Liège and a couple of other clubs, Roland something. There's a great podcast series. You'll find it on SoundCloud. Is that the name of it, SoundCloud? Roland de Châtelet, I think is his name. There's a 4 or 5 episode podcast series on him and his ownership of Charlton and how unhappy the Charlton owners were with the way he carried on. But it wasn't just the Charlton fans who were unhappy. So were the Standard Liège fans, because he was a bad owner. A lot of the clubs in the City football group, their unhappiness comes from the fact that they've kind of been rebranded. Like Mumbai City, Melbourne City, New York City. Like they've tried to basically make Manchester City Australia, Manchester City India, Manchester City USA. They haven't given those clubs their own identity. Now, some of them, New York City FC, didn't have an identity because they were created for this group, but that's the issue with their ownership. We have owners that I don't think it would be looking to do anything like that. I mean, they haven't rebranded the Pittsburgh Penguins as the Pittsburgh Red Sox. You know? So Roland de Châtelet, he owned Standard Liège, another club in Belgium, Alcorcon in Spain, and Charlton. And he was just a bad owner for all of them. In the same way that Todd Boehly is a bad owner for Chelsea and for Strasbourg. But someone like Tony Bloom is a good owner. And you don't hear complaints from Union about being part of this multi-club model. You don't hear complaints from Midtjylland fans about being part of a multi-club model because they're good owners. You're not hearing complaints from Vitória about Wes Edens, Nassif something like Nassif. That's going to annoy me, so I'm going to look it up. It begins with an S, I think. Hang on now. There we go. Nassif Sawiris. I think he's the richest man in Egypt. You don't hear complaints. You hear some complaints from the Forest ownership. From the Forest fans. You also hear complaints from the Olympiacos fans. You hear complaints from the Rio Ave fans. Because that fella's a lunatic. He's not a good owner. And this is the thing. All of the clubs where the fans complain about being part of one of these models, it's one of two things. Either because they've been turned into a branding opportunity, like some of the Citigroup or the Red Bull clubs, or because they're just flat out a bad owner and the fans of the more senior club in the relationship are also complaining about them. Now, obviously, there are Liverpool fans that complain about our ownership. Some of them for legitimate reasons and some of them because they're just tapped in the head. But nobody would claim our club is badly run. You might have issue with the lack of spending at times,
I know I've taken issue with the fact that when the infrastructure around the club was being extended and expanded and renewed and rebuilt and whatever else, that the owners didn't pay for that themselves and that they made the club pay for it. That bothers me because that's club funds going towards that that should be getting funneled into the team. And the owners under the FFP rules, which they are big proponents of, could have paid for them themselves and it wouldn't have affected our stance on FFP or on profit and sustainability. And ultimately, while yes, the players get a better training ground and yes, more fans get into Anfield, ultimately the big winner from the new training ground and the extended stadium are the ownership, because those things increase the value of their asset. An asset that's worth already 10, 11, 12 times what they paid for it. So that would be my gripe about them. My biggest gripe about them is that it bothers me that you would bang the drum for FFP and then not use FFP to your own advantage when the chance is there, and as a result, hold back progress on the pitch. But I don't think anybody has, nobody can say the club isn't in a good financial position. Nobody can say that over their tenure at the club, they haven't improved the club in all areas. We've certainly had more success under their watch for the last 13 years than we did the previous 13 years. Now, is it enough success? I would say no. I don't think one title and one Champions League is enough for 13 years of ownership. But again, that goes back to my point where had that money that was spent on the training ground and the extensions of both stands, the main and the Anfield Road, that money, which would have totaled probably, 250 million in total, had that gone into the team, potentially you're looking at five or six more really, really good high-end players over the past 7, 8 years. Not all at once. I'm not saying you spend it all at once. I'm saying literally it's 30 to 40 million per summer more that could have been spent, one extra player. How many times did we look at this Liverpool team and think, we've left ourselves one short, whether it was we left ourselves one short in midfield last season, we left ourselves one centre-back short two seasons prior to that, even the year we won the title, the year we finished second and got to the Champions League final and lost, we were one short in midfield that year, hence we were starting a sack of shit in midfield. So all of these things just kind of run into each other. That's the biggest gripe I would have towards the ownership, is that there hasn't been enough success, and part of that is that they spent that money the way they spent it, or the club had to spend it the way they spent it, rather than them funding it themselves, which, for me, it's improving your asset value. Speculate to accumulate. You haven't speculated shit. That's the gripe I would have. But again, overall, over the balance of their 13 years, they haven't been bad owners. They've been good custodians of the club. The club is far better off now than it was before. And I think they'd be the same wherever they go in. If they go into a Solskjaer, if they buy a club in Belgium, if they buy a club in Austria, maybe, which is a country that they looked at before, I think they will improve the club they take ownership of, because that's what they've done everywhere else. Like, the Red Sox are so much better off now than they were prior to Fenway Sports Group. And you'll get the odd crank on Twitter who will rant and rave about them from a Red Sox point of view. And again, there's legitimate reasons to criticize some of the things they've done with the Red Sox over the last few years. But at the same time, if you know your history, Red Sox fans pre-FSG would never have been making those complaints. The problem is they won four World Series and they've become entitled. And that happens. That happens. It's happened at Chelsea. It happened at City. It'll happen at Arsenal if they ever win more than an FA Cup. the fans will become entitled and they'll start to expect that success. New England Patriots fans are going to go the exact same way. Now, it's partly a Boston thing as well, but when you have no success, any success is great. But when you've had all the success, and remember, the Red Sox under their ownership, the most successful team in Major League Baseball since they bought that franchise. That's a hell of a thing, considering the money that's been spent by the Yankees, the Mets, the Dodgers, and others. Yet they're the most successful franchise.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
There's no legitimate reason to claim they're bad owners. None at all. At any of the stops they've had, whether it was Henry with the Florida Marlins, as they were at the time, Miami Marlins now, when he was part owner there, whether it's Henry and co. with the Red Sox, whether it's what they've done with the Penguins thus far, or what they've done with us. There's no way you can look at what they've done and say they haven't improved the standing of each and every club. Like, just take, for example, us. Get people to say they're wasting Jurgen Klopp. Who hired Jurgen Klopp? Oh, it was them. It was them. Yeah. They're wasting Virgil van Dijk and Mo Salah. Who bought them? Oh, they did. Right. We should have won another league title. Now, I do agree. But why is the word another in there? We should have won another Champions League. Agreed. But it's another. We've won one. If we hadn't won one, and we won one, we'd be fucking thrilled about it, as we were when we won it. Same with the league. You see, you win things, you become more entitled, you start to expect more of it, you get the drug of that success. And it starts to change how your brain processes these things. Now, again, we're Liverpool Football Club, so success is a must, but only because of what took place in the past. Because of Shankly, Paisley, Fagan, Penny, Poulier, Rafa. That's why we got here. And that success made us all entitled. Same with United. You go back to the 80s, speak to United fans. They were just desperate for any success because they hadn't had any since Busby. But Ferguson made them entitled. Now they demand success. When it doesn't come, they have tantrums. This is what happens at all clubs. So fingers get pointed left, right, and centre. But the bottom line of it is, these owners, while they haven't been successful enough, while they could have done more, while they certainly made some questionable decisions and some poor hires along the way, ultimately, if they were to sell the club tomorrow, they're selling a much better, healthier club than the club they bought. And that's all you can ask of any owner. It really is. And I think they'd do the same for a club that they buy into moving forward. I don't think it'll be a situation where they buy, let's say, a club who's traditionally worn white or black or blue or pink or yellow or orange or whatever, and all of a sudden make them wear red. That's not going to happen. They're not going to do that. They're not going to try and shove branding onto them. They're going to run that club as its own entity. Will it have benefits for us? Yes. Will it also have significant benefits for that other club? Absolutely. And that's how multi-club ownership should work, is that it benefits both parties, or all parties if it's more than two. Like, take, for example, Red Bull, right? Yeah, they all have the branding. But at the same time, you don't hear Leipzig fans or Salzburg fans or Bragantino fans or New York Red Bulls fans cribbing and crying about it. Why? Because the fortunes of all of those clubs have improved. Because Red Bull are good owners. Now, is it all a marketing tool for a soft, for an energy drink? Yes, it is. But at the same time, they're improving the clubs. They're improving what the experience is for those fans. Same thing with their F1 teams. Like, they've got two F1 teams. Yeah, one of them's a secondary team. It's more of a development team for the big team. But, like, they've won, what, 7 drivers' championships in the last 14 years? And they're going to win another one this year because Verstappen's unstoppable. And by the way, I'm now an expert on Formula One. I have watched all of the seasons of Drive to Survive. So if you've got any questions about Formula One, I'm your go-to from now on. Haven't watched a race start to finish in about 7 years, but nonetheless, I am well placed to answer your queries. lost my train of thought now. Yeah, like, it's a marketing tool, but the team is still benefiting. They're still pushing the boundaries, still investing heavily, still improving things. And that's what I believe FSG will do when they acquire a second club, and I think potentially a third club. It really wouldn't surprise me if they buy two in the next couple of years, one in Europe and one in South America, because I just think it makes sense from a pathway point of view. And I do admire some of what the City Football Group have done. I just think they've gone way overboard in terms of how many clubs they've purchased. I just don't think it's right that they should own this many clubs. You know, they own Manchester City, New York City, Melbourne City, Yokohama F. Marinos, Montevideo City, Girona, Shenzhen Peng City, Mumbai City, Lamel, Troyes, Palermo, and Bahia. I just don't think, if they just own City in Europe and one club in South America and one club in Asia and one club in North America and the club in Australia, I think it would be more palatable. It's the fact that they own, what, 5 clubs in Europe now. That's what bothers me. I just don't feel like you should be able to have that kind of system. I think that's where clubs will suffer, because no way you can look after that many clubs to the level that you really need to look after them. I don't believe, anyway. Some might disagree, but I don't believe you can. But when you look at what they've done, I mean, there's success being had all over the place. You know, it's not like many of these clubs are struggling. You know, Mumbai City have won the Indian Super League. New York City have won the MLS Cup. Shenzhen Peng City have won the China League One, which I think is the second division in China. Troyes won League Two. Now, they have since been relegated again. Yokohama have won 2 J Leagues. Melbourne City have won 2 A-Leagues. Their women's team has been dominant in the women's A-League. Montevideo City have been promoted, relegated, promoted again. Like, there's success been had all over. Girona obviously having a really good season. And we all know that there's cheating and stuff going on probably across the board. But at the same time, you're not looking at many of these clubs and thinking, well, the club has suffered as a result of the ownership. You're not seeing that. The one gripe I would have is that I think they've done a bit too much on the branding, and I feel like it's a little bit they own too many clubs. Frankly, that's my bigger gripe. They own too many clubs. Yeah, I just don't feel like they should be allowed to own that many clubs. Like, for example, Melbourne City was Melbourne Heart, had its identity as Melbourne Heart, were bought by the City Football Group and then basically remodeled. I just don't think that's right. But yeah, I've gone on and on and on. I think it's a good thing. I think FSG are the type of owners, and Michael Edwards is the type of person you want running your football club. And I think it will benefit both us and whatever club or clubs are purchased over the next year or two. Jack Lusby has a really good piece up on This Is Anfield regarding five priorities for Michael Edwards. Appointing a new sporting director. Looks like that one's as good as done. Richard Hughes. Finding Klopp's successor. We know there's two names out there, Alonso and Amorim. I think either of them would be good. I think everybody knows my preference on that. New contracts for Keith Rio, Virgil, Mo and Trent. We'll see how those work out. Replacing Vitor Matas. I think that comes more under the remit of the new manager personally than Michael Edwards. I think the new manager will have to have a big say in all kind of coaching staff decisions. And then the final one is identifying the new Mo Salah, given his age and the likelihood that the next extension would be his last. So finding the next Mo. But the thing is, right, people will throw out names like Nico Williams and Pedro Neto and whoever else. Unless Mo is leaving this summer, they're not the next Mo Salah, because Mo's probably got 3 or 4 good years left in him for us, if we want to have him that long, and if he wants to stay that long. The next Mo Salah is probably 16 right now. That's the fact of it. The guy who replaced, like, when I see people say, oh, he's the one that will replace Virgil, like they say Jarrell Kwanzaa, he'll replace Virgil. By the time Virgil's likely ready to step aside, Jarrell Kwanzaa will be 25. I don't know that he's going to want to sit 4 years and wait for Virgil to move on. The next Virgil's probably 15 or 16. And the other thing with Virgil is, I just watched Pepe put in an outstanding performance against Arsenal at, I almost called him Barcelona, against Arsenal at 41 years of age. Never a day in his life has he been anywhere near as good as Virgil. So when we see Thiago Silva and Pepe playing 40, there's no reason Virgil can't do similar if he wants to at a very, very high level, a much higher level than they're playing at now. So let's not put Virgil in the grave just yet. On AnfieldIndex.com, there's a piece about tomorrow night's game, a piece about Jan Molby discussing Manchester City's narrative. Premier League Giants queue for sporting defender, I think that is Diamande. David Lynch having a chat with Dave Davis on Michael Edwards. There's a predicted starting 11 for tomorrow night's game. And then podcast-wise, David Lynch back for a second pod this week to talk Michael Edwards with Dave Davis. There is a Molby on the spot, which, as always, is an absolute belter. It's an absolute belter. Like, I still... Minefield, for me, of all the stuff that we do, I just think Minefield is so unique and the two boys are so good at it. But I understand that it's kind of a niche. Under Pressure is brilliant. And those lads... Dan, Hamza, Cy, Phil, Danny Rhodes, they're all brilliant at what they do. And again, the podcast is great, but again, it's niche because not everybody's into the statistical side of stuff. But the best podcast we do across the board, and I think it's the best podcast that appeals to everybody in the entire Liverpool sphere, is Moulby on the Spot. Trev is the best host by a country mile in the Liverpool sphere. It's not even close. It's not even close. You've got lads that try and speak like they're real intelligent, but don't actually know anything about football. Trev is A, super intelligent, B, speaks really well, C, has that velvety voice, but D, really knows his football. Like, Trev really knows his football. But he also knows how to lead a conversation. And when he leads a conversation with Jan Moulby, who, for me, and I'm not just saying this because he's on AI, when I listen to Jan, I wonder why Jan isn't on Sky. And the reason is because he doesn't have the name recognition because he played in the 80s and early 90s. But Jan Moulby is a much better analyst of the game than Carragher or Neville or any of these other imbeciles that are on BT, like Rio Ferdinand, like a chap that doesn't know his arse from his elbow. Jan is so many levels above all of them. And yet, I still can't believe we have him here on Anfield Index. Just can't. And when you put him with Trev, it's the perfect combination. And they bounce off each other really well. And the podcast's a belter every single time. Every single time. Like, at the moment, Trev is dealing with some health stuff. So you think, the show might be a bit of... Because I know mine have definitely... Because I'm dealing with this vertigo shit. So I understand that my pods have dropped in quality over the last couple of weeks because I'm dealing with this, because I'm having to stop and start and go lay down and sit on the floor and do all kinds of mad things. But I understand that's because I'm dealing with health. So I'll be back to being mediocre once this passes from bad to mediocre. But I thought, you know, I know Trev's not feeling the May West, so maybe he'll have a bit of an off show. No, not a bit of it. The show's fucking unbelievable. So yeah, listen to Moulby on the Spot. And there is a new Old School which has come out this morning, myself and Gags recorded earlier. The opening might be a little funky because we did have to stop because there was a delay on the call, but I think it's a really good one. It's on Michael Edwards, it's on the future, so give that a listen as well. And I'll see you tomorrow. Take care of yourselves. Bye bye.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows. Sports Social Podcast Network.